Not every year that we get to have a shiur on Sukkos. Kippur has to fall on Shabbos, which it doesn't always do. But this year, we have occasion to meet between Yom Kippur and Sukkos to talk about this very special chag. And there's a great deal to say. Of the two central mitzvahs of Sukkos, we have, of course, the sukkah itself. And then we have the mitzvah of Arba Minim. It's important to realize on a fundamental level that for the 7 days of Sukkos, the mitzvah of Arba Minim is one of those mitzvahs that applies, it's a daytime mitzvah, which means in principle it applies for the entire day. What that means is if a person was unable to have access to Arba Minim at shul, so he can take after shul. If not in the morning, if necessary, he has the whole day. It's important one shouldn't feel that one has lost the mitzvah. The minhag, of course, is to take the Arba Minim and to make the bracha of Arba Minim and to do the Nanuim just before Hallel. We daven Shacharis, then there's some dynamic in Shul as each one finds what is hopefully their Arba Minim, and they make the bracha and then Hallel. And we do not make a bracha, for example, the first thing in the morning, even though in principle it's a mitzvah that if it applies during the day, if you have the whole day, you have from the beginning of the day. But nonetheless, we wait. And we take them to shul in their containers, and we wait until after Shachris, before Hallel. We should note that there is a minhag which is sourced in the Arizal to take Arba Minim before shul. He recommends to go, once you go into their sukkah, before davening, and that's where you make the bracha on the Arba Minim, and then take it to shul and once again remove them for Hallel. But as is pointed out by Mefarshim, the primary emphasis of the Arizal is not making the bracha before davening as opposed to afterwards. It's the importance of making the bracha in a sukkah. It happens to be that in many places, your sukkah is by your house. And therefore, in the interest of making the bracha in the sukkah, it's better to make the bracha before davening, before you go to shul. But were it to be the case, as is often the case now, that there is a sukkah next to the shul, there is no preference, there's no indication for the Arizal that one should make the bracha in their house, specifically in their own sukkah before davening. One could just as easily, and perhaps even preferably, go into the sukkah, which is next to the shul, just before Hallel. In any event, we need to understand why is it, what's behind the timing of making the bracha specifically at this juncture just before Hallel. That we know that there are certain junctures in the Hallel where we wave the lulav, the na'anuim. They are specifically when we say Hodu Lashem Kitov, and that can happen a few times, but it's always the same pasuk Hodu Lashem Kitov, and when we say Ona Hashem Hoshiana. Those are the two psukim that lead us to Na'anuim. Hodu Lashem Kitov and On Hashem Hoshiana. It is actually a machlokus between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai say On Hashem Hatzlichana as well. But, of course, the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And the question is, what is behind those two points specifically? Where do we derive this from? That specifically at Hodel Hashem Kitov and at On Hashem Hoshiana, that's where we shake. And the answer, which is found in the Tosfos in Masechet Sukkah, Daf Lamed Zayin, quoting the Medrash, is fascinating. It begins with a pasuk that we say, actually it's in Tehillim, but in Pesukei Dezimra we say a very similar section from Divrei Hayomim, it's the Hodu. Hodu, which is straight after Baruch She'amar, or before, depending on which shtibel you daven in. But at a certain point it says, Oz Yirannu Atzei Hayo'ah. Oz Yirannu Atzei Hayo'ah, then, that's when the trees of the forest will give song. Now what does that mean? Well, it means a number of things, but as far as we're concerned, says the Medrash, that is the basis of the shaking of the lulav. The shaking of the lulav is the song of the trees of the forest. Oz Yirannu Atzei Hayo'ah. So it's a type of song with movement, even though there's no sound, or not a musical sound. Okay, And where do we go from there? Says the Medrash. Well, what does the Pasuk say immediately after? Hodul Hashem Ki Tov. So that gives us the placement of the shaking in Hallel on Hodul Hashem Ki Tov. Okay. And what does the next Pasuk say? The Pasuk after that in Hodu is V'imru Hoshienu Elokei Yishenu V'kabtenu Managoyim, etc. And therefore, that's the second Pasuk, V'imru Hoshienu, which is also connected to and an emanation of Oz Yuranu Atzei Hayar. And that gives us our second set of Na'anuim at the point of On Hashem Hoshiana, corresponding to V'imru Hoshienu. So this is very interesting. Of all the places in Hallel, Hodu and On Hashem Hoshiana, they come from the trail that has been set down in those psukim in Hodu, and it all sources back to Oz Yiranenu Atzei Hayar, the song of the Lulav. But what we do see here, and this is what we need to develop, the waving of the Lulav. What is it? What are we accomplishing? Here we see very clearly that the waving of the lulav is an act of Hallel. And what an amazing thing that is. As far as we've never met Hallel which is not verbal or oral. Hallel is something that you say. And along comes the Pasuk, Oz Yiranenu Atzei Hayar, and tells us that Hallel is also something that you do. It's body language. It's using an object to express that praise. And we see that this idea of the Nanuim, of the praise of Hallel, of the Lulav, is integral to the Lulav. It's important to realize that we have a very interesting relationship with the Nanuim. Because on the one hand, the fact is, and no one does this, but it's important to realize, that on a Din Torah level, on a strict basic level, one fulfills the mitzvah as soon as you've picked up the Lulav and Esrog. As soon as you pick them up, even if you didn't shake them, pick them up, put them down, ulekachtem lachem, and you took. So you do fulfill the mitzvah without shaking them. Quite true. But on the other hand, we know that each of the Arba Minim have minimum dimensions. There are the three Tvachim, most of them, the Arovos, the Hoshana, the Hadasim, are three tvachim, however big a tefach is, but three of tvachim. And the lulav has an extra tefach. The lulav is always taller than the others, and it has to be. And if it isn't taller, it's disqualified. It has an extra tefach. Why does it have an extra tefach? Says the Gemara, kedei l'naneabo, because you've got to have something that extends further than the others in order that you can shake it, and it will make a difference. So we see a most interesting idea that on the one hand, the action of the Na'anuim, if you didn't do it, you just still fulfill the mitzvah. But if your lulav isn't Na'anuim compatible or Na'anuim friendly, because it doesn't have enough that would allow you to do Na'anuim, it's completely disqualified, even on a basic level. It's not even the object called a lulav. Because the capacity for Na'anuim is embedded within the lulav. And very interesting is the enigmatic phraseology of the Rambam. For the Rambam, as he describes the mitzvah of Arba Minim, so he says the basic mitzvah is to pick it up. But the mitzvah kehilchasa, the halachic mitzvah, which is an interesting expression because I thought all mitzvahs were halachic. But what he means to say is that the full mitzvah, the real mitzvah, the proper mitzvah, Kahalacha, is to shake the Arba Minim. So it has a very interesting categorization, the Na'anuim of the mitzvah. But we do see that the shaking of the lulav, that's an act of Hallel. In fact, there's a most fascinating comment of the Yerushalmi in Sukkah. As we know, there's many things, a number of things that can disqualify the Arba Minim, and that's the whole third parak of Maseches Sukkah. If it's stolen, if it's this, if it's that, Lulav HaGozel. And one of the disqualifications is Lulav HaYovish, if it's dry. How dry is dry? That's a question for the Poskim. I doubt any of our Lulavim would ever get to that stage, certainly not over Sukkahs. But nonetheless, if it enters the category called Lulav HaYovish, if it's too dried out and brittle and pale and the like, is disqualified. Why? Well, the simple answer is, well, it doesn't look nice and it's not mehudar, and hidur mitzvah is very important for arba minim. And that's the primary answer. But the Yerushalmi says, the reason why a dry lulav is disqualified is because the pasuk in Halal states, lo hamesim yehalalu ka. The dead don't praise Hashem. It's a dead lulav. It's dry like that. Now, aside from all the other ways to react to this Yerushalmi, what we do see is its disqualification is based on the fact that it's no longer eligible for Halel. That's not a Halel de Kalulav. Lo amesim yehalalu ka. But once again, this tells us that the shaking of the lulav is part of the Halel. It's got to be compatible with Halel. And acharei hadvarim ha'eleh, once we see that indeed the shaking of the lulav, the waving of the lulav, more correctly, is an act of halal, I think we can well understand why, if the Rambam says the proper mitzvah is not only to pick up the lulav, but also to wave it, then the mitzvah shlema, the fullest fulfillment of the mitzvah, is not only to wave it, but to wave it within halal. Because then you actually have a fantastic combination of the halal that we say and the halal that we do. That is the optimum time to fulfill the mitzvah of arba minim. And that is why, say a number of poskim, we do not make the bracha on the lulav straight away in the morning, even though we could. But we wait until just before halal because we're looking to connect the bracha to the optimum fulfillment of the mitzvah, which is actually to wave it. And not only to wave it, but to wave within halal. And therefore we go straight from the bracha into halal itself. Moreover, we should know, and I mentioned this, this is not a halacha shir, and in fact this is what I'm about to discuss is a dispute amongst the poskim, but just to mention the question. What happens if a person is in shul on Sukkot and they're saying halal and everyone has their lulavim and they're waving at hodu at and he doesn't have a lulav, he doesn't have arba minim. Of course, someone after halal will gladly lend them to him. The question is, what should he do? Should he say halal together with everyone else, even though he's not waving his lulav, but he doesn't have a lulav? You say halal because halal bitzibur is an important thing. And afterwards, someone will give him a lulav, and then he can do the mitzvah of arba minim. And some say indeed that's to do. I think that's the intuitive path. Doesn't have. So he doesn't want to miss halal with the tzibur, so he says halal, and afterwards he makes his bracha, and he does his na'anuim. That is the opinion of the Leket Yosher, who was a Talmud of the Truma Sadeshen. But there are other poskim who say no. He should wait. Better to forfeit halal with tzibur than to say halal on Sukkos without a lulav and esrog. In other words, that combination is so important that if you don't have it, wait for it. And if by waiting for it you'll have to say halal by yourself, because the tzibur has already said halal, it's worth it. And again, we're not paskening. There are two sides to this question, but the very fact that the second side exists, I think, is also further bears out the essential connection that exists between the arba minim and the halal. So we have established that the act of na'anuim, and I think it's important to give some perspective and insight into the waving of the lulav, otherwise you're just waving it around and no one quite knows what to do, other than just to be careful not to hurt the person behind them, which is also a mitzvah. But what is the na'anuim themselves? The na'anuim is an act of halal. And what's interesting is, at this point, to see how the discussion goes a step further. Because if it's an act of praise, praise over what, specifically, if one can ask? There are no words to this praise. But is there a specific angle? Is there a specific item that we are praising Hashem over? And of course, why is it specifically in Pesach? There's no na'anuim any other time, only in Sukkot, not in Pesach, not in Shavuot. So how did this aspect of halal through action find its way into Sukkot specifically? There is a Yalkut Shimoni in Parak M, or as we know, the Moadim in Vayikra Perikav Gimel, all of the Ma'adim are discussed, Eile Ma'adi Hashem, Mikore Kodesh. And at a certain point, the Yalkut, when the Pasuk comes to talk about the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrog, Ulekaftem Lachem Bayom HaRishon, the Yalkut comments as follows. It quotes the Pasuk from Tehillim. Tikosev Zos Lador Acharon. So the Pasuk states, Tikosev Zos Lador Acharon, let this be written for the final generation, Va'am Nivra Yehalel Ka, the nation that is created will praise Hashem. That's the Pasuk, as they state in Tehillim. Says the Yalkut, Tikosev Zos Lador Acharon, this should be written for the final generation. Who is the final generation? I mean, every generation is to date the final generation. Who does this refer to? Says the Yalkut, all generations are the final generation. Eilu hadoros halalu, all of these generations, shehem netuim lemisa. Any generation that was inclined towards death is the last generation. And which generation is that? Says the Yalkut, all of them. Why? The Pasuk continues, Va'am Nivra Yehalel Ka, the nation that's been created will praise Hashem. Meaning, She'asad HaKadosh Baruch Hu Livroso Bria Chadasha. Every generation is the final generation, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates it anew. What does all this mean? Says the Yalkut, Uma Aleinu Lasos. What do we do? How do we respond to all of this? Likach Lulav Ve'esrog Ulekales LaKadosh Baruch Hu, to take a lulav esrog and to praise Hashem. Lefichach Moshe Maser Es Yisrael Ve'omer Lahem Ulekachtem Lachem Bayom HaRishon. That's why Moshe tells Bnei Yisrael to take the lulav and esrog on the first day of Sukkot. And these are rather mysterious words, but the Medrash is telling us that the Hallel, which the lulav and esrog represent, is that the Jewish people have been created anew after being leaning towards their demise, and the time to praise for this is Sukkot. That is to say, the praise of the Lulav and Esrog on Sukkot is over having been successful during the days of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are difficult days. If we weather them, if we get through them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants us kapara. So that is why at this juncture, the Torah puts Sukkot immediately after Yom Kippur, effectively immediately afterwards. And there are other months where there's less going on. Why is it put so close to Yom Kippur? Because it's about Yom Kippur. It's about praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what happened from the days from Rosh Hashanah until Yom Kippur. So the specific orientation of what the Hallel is, when we wave the Lulav and Esrog, is we're praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for giving us a good din, thank you for bringing us to this point. It's a Shechianu, it's a literal Shechianu. And interestingly, what we saw explicit in the words of the Yalkut, the nation is created, it will praise Hashem on Sukkot, it's actually contained within the verses that we referred to earlier as to when do we wave. We wave at Hodu, and we wave at On Hashem Hoshiyana. Why? Tosfos told us, because it all begins with Oziranenu Atzei Hayar. It's the song of the trees of the forest. And the next pasuk says Hodu Lashem Kitov, so we wave at Hodu. And the one after that says Ve'imra Hoshienu, so we wave at On Hashem Hoshiyana. But it all begins with Oziranenu Atzei Hayar. Well, how does that opening pasuk conclude? Oziranenu Atzei Hayar, the shaking of the lulav, Milifnei Hashem Kibolish Bokas Haaretz, from before Hashem has come to judge the world. So that pasuk itself is not only giving us, I mean, if it is the source of the waving of the Arba Minim, it's also telling us what it's all about. Milifnei Hashem, kibolish botas ha'aretz. So that actually corroborates, I mean, all of these streams are heading to the same river as to what the Nanuim are about. But what is most fascinating to take note of is that the Yalkut in Parshas Emor quoted the pasuk Tikosev Zos Lador Acharon, which said Va'am Nivra Yehalel Ka, the nation that's created. That's quite a thing to say. Something that's created no longer exists, or didn't exist prior to being created. What does that have to do with us? And we understand that perhaps we were in a difficult situation or something of the sort, But to be vindicated or to be successful in din, which could have gone either way, it doesn't make you created, it makes you successful, vindicated. Why do we call this success Am Nivra, a nation that's created? Well, the answer to this question will really lead us back to the power of tshuva, which is something I think we take for granted. But there is a Yerushalmi, obscure Yerushalmi in Maseches Makkos in the second parak. Sha'alu l'chachma. They asked wisdom. If a person sinned, what should happen to him? So wisdom is the concept of wisdom. How does wisdom answer? Chata'im tirdof ra'ah. People who sin should be pursued by evil. That's it. You asked, that's the answer. Now in situations like this, it's advisable to get a second opinion. So the Yerushalmi continues. But they asked nevuah, each section needs to be understood. They asked nevuah, prophecy. Hanefesh achotes, matei alea. What should happen? Someone sins. Says nevuah, hanefesh achotes, hitamus. A soul that sins should die. So we keep going, up and up, higher and higher, till finally, sha'alu l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is a fascinating idea in itself, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the last one to be asked. First asked were nevuah and chachma. We would have understood that ultimate nevuah and ultimate chachma are expressions of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say, and therefore there wouldn't be a contrary answer. But they've given a very negative verdict, a terrible, it seems to be decisively disastrous. HaNefesh HaChotis HiTamus. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Yaseh Tshuva V'Yiskapela. You can do tshuva and it will be okay. Now, what does it mean? None of these other concepts knew, so to speak, the answer, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Mefarshim point out that the idea of Chachma, the idea of Nevuah, and Chachma represents observing the world, and Nevuah represents accessing all levels of existence, the concept of Tshuva doesn't really exist anywhere in the world, not in the natural world the way it should be run, because it's a violation of every natural law. Natural law, spiritual law, is cause and effect. What we call the attribute of justice is cause and effect. A negative effect has a negative action, a consequence. Positive effect has positive reaction. But a negative action has a negative reaction. And to wish it away, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't actually exist. That's what the Gemara says in Maseches Psachim, that tshuva was created before the world. Why? Because it doesn't really have a place within the world. It's an external thing. It circumvents and violates every rule of the world. And with this in mind, Nevuah and Chachma, each one in their own way, whether they start with the ground and work upwards or start in the heavens and work downwards, they're looking at what should be the answer. If a person destroys themselves, they should be destroyed. I mean, it's very, very simple. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, who represents this Chiddush of Tshuva outside of the way the world naturally runs, comes and says, you can do Tshuva and it will be okay. But that's a miracle. And it is literally a miracle. In fact, there's a name for this miracle. It's called Chias HaMesim. Because if nature dictates that a person should meet their demise, if they do, I'm not even sure what qualifies as enough wrongdoings. So for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to violate that is to miraculously keep them alive. And all of this is contained within the words of the Yalkut, which adduces the Pasuk. What happens on, who are the Jewish people on Sukkot? They're a nation recreated. Ve'am Nivra Yehalel Ko. And we should know, by the way, this concept, which is such an extreme sounding concept, that full tshuva and full kapara is nothing short of Tchias HaMesim, it actually resonates in halacha. There are interesting halachas for how to relate to friends of yours that you haven't seen for a while. So the natural Jewish response is, you know, why didn't you call? But the halacha states that if you haven't seen a friend, and however a friend is defined, if you haven't seen a friend for a month. So when you see them, you make a bracha shechianu. So that, and that's it's in the Gemara and it's in Shulchan Aruch. Now there are parameters, etc. Does that mean you haven't heard from them in any form, shape, or form? Which is actually very difficult, because if they're really your friends, especially nowadays, how could you not have heard from them for so long? Okay. So if you haven't seen them for a month, when you see them, you make the bracha of Shechion, just like you eat your new fruit on Rosh Hashanah and everything else. And if you haven't seen them for a year, you make a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Mechayei HaMeisim. It's halacha. It's not a secret. It's black and white in the Gemara, codified in Shulchan Aruch. Why wouldn't it be? No one argues it in the Gemara. The question is, why would you make a bracha Mechayei HaMeisim if you haven't seen them for a year? The Marsha explains, and this explanation of the Marsha is codified by the Mishnah Berurah. Because if you haven't seen them for a year, it's a standardized amount of time, but by definition, if you haven't seen them for a year, that means between the last time you saw them and this time, they will have gone through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And if they're still here, Tchias HaMeisim. So someone that you haven't seen for a year, you see before you living fulfillment of Tchias HaMeisim, make a bracha on them. And all of that is coming back to this pasuk of Va'am Nivra Yahalokah. So I believe that this really gives new depth and meaning to the Nanuim that we perform every time we wave the lulav. It's a gesture of praise towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu for recreating us, for taking us through Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, for performing miracles for us, for violating the natural order of the world for us. And here we are, at the very least, on Sukkot, to say thanks. So that's a word with regards to the Arba Minim. And now let's see how Sukkot itself develops. Something changes over Sukkot. Famously, the korbanos on the day of Sukkot, they do not stay the same. The famous 70 cows of Sukkot, the Shivim Parim, on the first day there are 13, but they go down progressively every day. Another one, 13 down to 12 to 11, until on the seventh day, there's only 7 of them. What is the significance of this going down? As we know, in principle, the 70 cows represent the 70 nations of the world. That Rashi says, when the Beis HaMikdash is standing, we also bring a korban at least once a year for the well-being of every other nation in the world. In fact, the Gemara states rather ironically that if they only realized that, they wouldn't have destroyed it, because their own success also derives from the Beis HaMikdash. They would have set up people to protect it. But that's the Jewish people. For ourselves, first and foremost, we look out. We are family with each other. But beyond that, there is a broader interest in the welfare of the entire world. And indeed, according to some, that's really the message of Maftir Yonah on Yom Kippur, which is, it's so mysterious, the whole Sefer, but the way that it ends, it's not, because it's not really about the Jewish people. It's about the people of Nineveh. They weren't particularly righteous, but tshuva was also available for them. And Yonah didn't want them to do tshuva. He wasn't so much interested in them, especially it reflected badly on the Jewish people. But nonetheless, it's part of the message. It's a very broad message. On the day of Yom Kippur itself, to read about that, to have the well-being of the entire world. Okay, but first and foremost, we have our own well-being at stake, especially as others don't. This is we've mentioned in the past, the famous comment of the Vilna Gaon, when Avram davens for the people of Sodom, and it's the longest conversation that we have in the Torah between Avram and anyone. It's between him and HaKadosh Baruch Hu negotiating to save the cities of Sodom, Amorah, the lowest of the low. And he prefaces and says, Hineinu ha'alti ladaber el Hashem, I have expressed this will to speak before you, Hashem, about the cities of Sodom and Amorah. V'anochi ofer v'efer. I'm dust, I'm ashes, ofer v'efer. So the pshat, of course, is, here's Avram negating himself, effacing himself, as if to say, who am I to speak before you? I'm only dust and ashes. Nonetheless, I plead the case for Sodom and Gomorrah. But no, he offered for Ephraim. Says the Vilna Gaon, there's a remez here. For Avram is really in the beginnings of the Jewish people, and he's putting himself out for a nation which has nothing in common with the future of the Jewish people. They seem to be only a liability for the entire human race. And still he puts himself out for them. And where does this come from? Says the Gaon, Avram says, why am I talking about them? Why am I pleading their case? V'anochi, for I am Ofar v'Efer. Ofar v'Efer, the pshat is dust and ashes. But if you look at the two words Ofar v'Efer, you will see that the word Ofar has the letters Ayin Par. Ayin Par, 70 counts. And Efer is Aleph Par, the one count. The one cow is Shmini Atzeres, and that's when the Jewish people connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu exclusively. Quite true. But Avram is saying, I'm not only Afer. It's not only about the Jewish people. I'm also Ofar. I'm also Ayin Par. So says the Gaon. So this is the well-known theme behind the 70 cows. It's the 70 nations of the world. But it is interesting as well that they go down, and there's a number of explanations. Rashi comments. In the name of the Medrash Tanchuma, this is Rashi, the end of Parshas Pinchas. Uver Medrash Rabbi Tanchuma, Limda Torah Derech Eretz. The Torah teaches Derech Eretz, how should we translate? The way of the world. Shemi Sheyeshlo Achsenai. If someone has a guest in their house, so how do they treat them? Says Rashi, you know, depends what day it is. Yom Rishon, on the first day, they've just arrived, the royal treatment. Yachilenu Patumos, they feed them fatty meats. Lemachor, next day, still here. Yachilenu Dogim, they feed them fish. Fatty meats was yesterday, today it's fish. Lemachar, Yachilenu Basar Behema. I'm not sure exactly what that the hierarchy here is, right? Meat from an animal, apparently not as good as fish. Lemachar Machilenu Kidneys. But on day four, it's already grains. Lemachar Machilo Yerek. Day after that, it's vegetables. Poches Veholech. It goes down and down. Kepari HaChag. Like the Pari HaChag. Day one, 13. Day two, still here, 12. And it still goes down, 11, 10, until 7. This is a rather unusual comment of Rashi for a number of reasons. Number one, it really brings us back to the way, this has been described as Derech Eretz. Now Derech Eretz can mean more than one thing. In other words, normally we translate Derech Eretz like, you know, once you have Derech Eretz, meaning it's respect. So it doesn't really sound that respectful. It could be that it's more of an observation. Derech Eretz, this is the way people are. And it is the way people are. Okay, there's only so long you can keep up the royal treatment for. Okay, and that's life, therefore. So day one, of course, it's meat. Day two, you have got your chicken. And day three, it's fish. But from day four, granola. And that's the Rashi, kidneys. But why are we being told this? And why is this being enshrined in the order of the korbanos? It sounds like a fact of life, but shouldn't we, as the nation of the Torah, perhaps, if anything, be trying to combat this, as if to say, look, that's the way people are, but maybe try and be a little bit more idealistic and more hospitable, and don't just go the way that everybody goes. But the Torah says, Limdecha Torah derech eretz, says the Tanchuma. The Torah teaches you. It almost sounds like this is the way it should be. But how can that be? And moreover, what does any of this have to do with Sukkos? I think the decline from good food to normal food is true every day of the year. It's not only true of Sukkos. So it's a striking Rashi. Says the Sefer Shiras David, the truth of the matter is that it's a positive development. This downgrading of the food that you give the guest. First day, steak. Second day, a little bit less. And so on and so forth. It's a positive development. And the reason why is because although for a guest, royal treatment is the best, but on the other hand, one doesn't always like to remain a guest. As if to say, every guest really would like to feel completely at home. It's just not actionable straight away. Which means that initially, when someone comes into your house and you say, please come in, you know, make yourself at home, there are limits to what that means. I mean, they cannot, you know, take their shoes off and put them up on the couch, and you said to make yourself at home. Within a highly specific context, what you mean is, you may be seated. Well, that's what it means on day one. And of course, everything is offered to them. If they try and help, no, please stay where you are. If they offer to do the dishes, no, everything is fine. How long will that go on for? And how long should it go on for? Meaning, it's nice to be treated as a guest, but after a while, you don't want to remain a guest. For somewhere that you'll be on an ongoing basis, on the contrary, you actually graduate into the level of ben bayis. And when you do, you willingly accept upon yourself the fact that no one's going to give you the royal treatment anymore, and you actually got to be a bit more involved. And it's done with berotzon, because it's worth it, because you're finally at home. So when the Torah says limincha Torah derech eretz, it's a lesson. It's the way things should be. Don't treat a guest constantly, permanently as a guest. For ultimately, what they gain on the food scale, they lose out on the fundamental scale. What does this have to do with Sukkos? Sukkos is a day, or a time, when we get progressively closer, really, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we pretty much go out into his house. We leave our house, and we go to his house. And that's the tzel. That's the shade of the sukkah. Not much there. It's just us, really, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And on day one, we're a guest. But the goal of Sukkos is, and it's a seven-day cycle, that means that it runs the gamut of the 7 days of the week. That means it represents an entire cycle of time. And the goal is that by the end, each day progressively, we get more and more at home. Until we become b'nei bayis. And therefore the derech eretz of that is that the royal treatment goes down. So it's a fascinating way of looking at this decline of the korbanos. As the korbanos go down, our status goes up. And proof that this decline is a positive development, says the Shiras David, is from the Gemara. As we know, of the Shalosh Regalim, when we say Hallel, so sometimes it's a whole Hallel, sometimes it's what's called a half Hallel. What determines whether it's whole Hallel or half Hallel? For Shavuos, well, there's only one day really, Min HaTorah, it's the one. For Sukkos, it's Hallel Shalem, all 8 days. For Pesach, it's only the first day. This Hallel Shalom. All the others, the last 6 days, are Chatzi Hallel. Why? Says the Gemara in Erechin on Daf Yud, because the Korbanos of Pesach are constant. That is to say, for each of the 7 days, the Korban is exactly the same. That's why, as you remember from the Kriya Satorah, it tells you the Korbanos and then says, Ka'ele, Ka'ele Tasu Lashem Shivas Yomim. What we said on the first day, do the same, repeat up for 7 days. And therefore, because the second day has no shift to the first day, it's the same in every respect, therefore it doesn't have that chidush of Yom Tov. It hasn't graduated in any way. So the first day of Pesach, of course, is very different than the day before. The day before it wasn't Pesach at all. But once you've had the first day of Pesach, so then it remains constant for the rest of Pesach, and no day brings a chiddush, a development within the Chag, and therefore there's no full Hallel past the first day. Shavuos, of course, is full Hallel because it's in contrast to the day before Shavuos. And what about Sukkos? Says the Gemara. So now you see, every day of Sukkos is different. It's a development. Choluk b'korbanosa. It's a new day. It's almost like a new chag. Because although it's still part of Sukkot, but yesterday there was that amount of korbanos, but today there's a different amount of korbanos, and it's embedded within the chag, because even nowadays that we don't have those korbanos, but we still say full halal every day. It's about the nature of the chag. So that's the key. That explains all of the halal for all of Shalosh Regalim. If the day is different than the day before, it's a development, and that registers, it finds its resonance in Halal Shalim. Okay, that's what the Gemara says. The question, says Shiraz David, is, it's true. On every successive day of Sukkot, the Korbanos are different than the day before. But they're less. So that's worse than if they were the same. In other words, if you tell me that the second day of Pesach, yesterday you brought 7, today you bring 7, so nothing's really changed, and therefore it doesn't warrant a full halal for the second day. Second day of Pesach, oh, everything's different. It is different. It's less than the first day. So less becomes more. Because it's less, therefore, it's a new chag. It's less of a chag. So how does this find its mark in full halal for the entire sukkahs? The answer, says Shiraz David, is, what do we see from here? It is more of a chag. Every day that there's one korban less means we become b'nei bayis one stage more, and it's a higher level than the day before. And it finds its expression in halal shalim. So this is a very interesting perspective as well on the famous decline, daily decline of the Pari HaChag, and also gives us an orientation as to what we're looking to achieve during these 7 days of Sukkot. What often goes unmentioned as we talk about Sukkot is Shmini Atzeres, because so much is happening in Sukkot, and one way to talk Sukkot is to talk about Shmini Atzeres, which is a luxury that we don't have. And therefore, I wanted to devote the final section this evening to Shmini Atzeres, which for us here is Shmini Atzeres becomes Simchas Torah. It's the same day. It's a great deal happens in that one day. It goes up and down a good deal. And especially as we contrast the korbanos of Sukkos, which are so many and profuse, and you've got Parim Shnayim and Kavasim Abasa Kvasim and all the Purim, and it's just there's so many. And in contrast with that, Bayom Hashmini, on the eighth day, Atzeres Tielachem, everything stops. Bikraptem Ola Ishe Reach Nichoach Lashem, Par Echad, Ail Echad. That's it, just the one Ail, very much in contrast to everything that's been happening prior to that point. And what are we to make of Shmini Atzeres? What does it do for us? Sukkos is Sukkos, and Shmini Atzeres, it's no longer Sukkos, strictly speaking. In many respects, it's a new chag. We make Shechianu on Shmini Atzeres. It's Yom Tov, just Yom Tov, so to speak. And what is its role following Sukkos? So Rashi quotes, Kebonim haniftorim mi'aviyim. It's like children who are taking leave of their father. For who omer lahem, and he says to them, kosh alai pridaschem. It's hard for me, for you to go. So, ikvu od yom echad. So, stay another day. It's an amazing Rashi from the Medrash. So what is Shmini Atzeres? We've been together, so to speak, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the 7 days of Sukkot, and then it's time to go. But Hashem says, but it's hard for me for you to go. So stay one more day. That's Shmini Atzeres. That one more day. Now, on an emotional level, it's possible to relate to this. But of course, we need to understand what exactly is happening. Especially this question, as is phrased by the Shem Yishmuel, and I make specific reference to this question of the Shem Yishmuel, because this drosha of his is dated for Shmini Atzeres Tafresh Ayin Dalet, which is Shmini Atzeres of 1913. exactly 100 years ago. So this kasha is 100 years old. On the one hand, we do relate to the father saying, it's hard for you to go, but on the other hand, how does it really help? Or does it really help? In other words, it's the inevitable parting. So we've been together for 7 days, and now it's day 8, time to go. But the father says, well, it's hard for you to go. So what do? You go tomorrow. It's going to be hard tomorrow. So nothing's really changed. It's just it's been put off for a day. But nothing's really been treated. Maybe it can't be treated. It's just, that's how it is. But in a sense, the question is more accentuated, because if we stay for 8 days, then it's not that the parting, whatever would happen anyway. It will be worse. And the reason why is because, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, not want us to go? Because it's been so nice together. So the more it is nice together, the harder it will be to let us go. So if it was difficult after 7 days, it's going to be impossible after 8 days. So this doesn't seem to solve the problem at all. At the very least, it seems to delay it, and at the worst, it seems to exacerbate it. It's good China. So Mefarshim explain. It's interesting that the words kosh alai predaschem, it's hard for me for you to leave. So we understand on a simple level, and there is no doubt an element of that. Why is it hard? Because then we're not together. But there's another dimension here. What have we been through? And we've all been through it. From the beginning of Elul, certainly from the beginning of Tishrei, as far as, you know, the Moadim of the Torah are concerned, it's Rosh Hashanah, it's Yom Kippur, and then Sukkot. So these are very meaning-laden days. And a great deal happens to them, and a great deal happens to us during these days. And Yom Kippur is out of this world. And then Sukkot, if we relate to it and draw from it what can be taken from it. So there we are, being impacted by all of these days, being elevated by all these days, and then, time to go. The question is, what happens when we go? How does that relate to that which we experience during these 3 weeks? Is it all left behind? It all stays in the sukkah? Because we're not going to be in the sukkah anymore. Does it all stay in Yom Kippur? Because we're not fasting anymore, and we're not blowing the shofar anymore. And that is the critical question of how to leave Sukkot, which is essentially how to leave Tishrei. Because so much has happened, but the question is, but do we take it with us? Or do we leave it behind? Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't leave it behind. Kosh alai predaschem. That would be difficult for me. If everything that's happened over the last 3 weeks, and then you just predaschem, you just separate from it, and just go back to life as it was. Which is easy to do. I mean, that's the default. Shift back, and it's the easiest thing, just to get back to the shigra, as they call it. So, that's a problem. It is the problem, actually, of what happens after these days. But what's the solution? The solution is Shmini Atzeres. And the reason why is because something happens on Shmini Atzeres. We finish the Torah, and we start it again. In other words, the question is raised, what is there a vehicle somehow? Is there a way that to maintain a channel open with what happened during these days that can accompany us throughout the year? Or do we say, that was then, this is now, never the twain shall meet? The answer is, today is the day that we begin the Torah again anew. Because the Torah is something that we will carry with us throughout the year. And if we start it, this is the kissing point of the end of Sukkot with the beginning of our Torah study. So in a sense, we'll be looking to maintain that contact and maintain that level and speaking that language as we learn the Torah throughout the year. And therefore, looked at this way, the Shmini Atzeres is the solution. It's not just prolonging the problem, because it's giving us a way to take it with us as we go. So we've been together for Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot, and then it's time to go. And Shmini Atzeres, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, it's time to go, but, you know, I wrote a book. You may want to read it. We'll start today, and let it accompany you throughout the year. And it's fascinating because this really lays emphasis much more on the beginning of the Torah, on the Shmini Atzeres, than finishing the Torah. As if to say, we finish the Torah, we finish one level of understanding. But the emphasis is really on beginning the Torah. And moreover, we see from the Mefarshim that even our joy over completing the Torah is only because it allows us to begin the Torah again. When one finishes the Torah, we make a siyum. What is the source of the idea of making a siyum? Where does it come from? Who was the first person ever to make a siyum? Says the Medrash, Shir HaShirim Rabbah. When Shlomo HaMelech, he had that dream, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, what do you want? You want riches? Do you want wisdom? And he asked for wisdom. Lev Chacham Umevin, a wise and discerning heart. And he woke up in the morning, and he had it. He had a wise and discerning heart. So the Pasuk says, he went to Yerushalayim, and he made a Mishteh. Says the Medrash, Shir HaShirim, Mikan Sha'osim Suda L'Gemara Shel Torah. From here we see that when you finished a section of Torah, a Sefer of Torah, whatever, you make a Suda. It comes from Shlomo HaMelech. Ask with Soloveitchik, Shlomo HaMelech didn't finish anything. He didn't actually learn anything yet. All the Pasuk says is that he had a wise heart, which is a good asset, but he hadn't done anything. It was day one. He woke up and he had a Lev Chacham Umevin, and he made a Mishteh. And we see from here, when you finish something, you made a Mishteh. But how does us finishing anything, a Masechta or whatever, how does that relate to Shlomo who's just starting? It's not the same thing. Says Rav Soloveitchik, it is the same thing. Shlomo HaMelech made a Su'udah because he found himself, he was celebrating the fact that he had a wise and understanding heart. When a person finishes a section of Torah, Masechta, or the like, so why does he make a Mishteh? Why does he make a Siyum? He's celebrating the fact that having completed another Masechta of Torah, he's now wiser. He has a wise and discerning heart with which to engage in the rest of Torah and in the Torah again. And therefore, Shlomo HaMelech got it in a dream. The rest of us attain a fraction of it through learning. But when we finish, having seen something, why are we so celebratory? Because now just imagine what we can do. Now imagine what we can learn. Having seen this much, we're now empowered and equipped to learn all the more, like Shlomo HaMelech was. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik says that his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, when they're Mechabit, of course, they always give Kibudim, Chasam Torah, Chasam Bereshis. And he was always medaktik to be chosen as Chasam Bereshis, not Chasam Torah. Because he saw more celebration in the fact that he was starting out than in the fact that what he's finished. And in fact, we've mentioned in the past, I think we always begin this way as we start Bereshis, but it's, we call it Simchas Torah. And the Kotzker Rebbe, and it's, if one may say, it's something of an anomaly for him, because normally the Kotzker Rebbe brought people crashing down when they were artificially high. But here, he actually lifted people up when they were feeling a bit low. Because the Kotzker Rebbe says, we need to have a way through Simchas Torah. Here we are, here's the Torah. This is the point that everyone realizes what Am Haaretz they are. In other words, the whole Torah is right in front of you, and now the question is, shall we celebrate? That's when a person begins to ask, well, how much have I really learned? And do I really deserve to be the one who's dancing with the Torah, celebrating around the Torah? I haven't really learned that much, says the Kotzker Rebbe. True, you haven't. But the celebration on, or you may haven't, but the celebration on Simchas Torah, we're not celebrating what we've learned. Everyone can feel sorry for themselves. We're celebrating the year that's before us. And the world is your oyster. So you should celebrate. Everyone has equal opportunity. And it's interesting that this explanation ties in with the well-known explanation of the Vilna Gaon with regards to the two words of Simcha and Sasson. They're always together. How would we translate them? It would be meaningless. One will be happiness and one will be joy, and they could just as easily be interchangeable in translation terms. What is the difference between them? Says the Vilna Gaon, there's many different types of happiness. There's the happiness that you have when you embark on a venture. It's a very happiness anticipation. And then there's the happiness, there's a certain different happiness of completion when you finish something, different feelings. Simcha is the happiness that accompanies the person as they set out on a venture. And Sosom is the happiness for a job well done. That's why we say, actually, on Shabbos morning, with regards to the Tzava HaShamayim, at the sun, moon, and stars, Semechim B'Tzeisom V'Sosim B'Voam. As they go out, as they emerge, Smechim, because they're just starting. V'Sosim, and as they come back, as they finish, they're Sosim. And the day is called Simchas Torah. Simchas Torah, as opposed to Sosan HaTorah, Simchas Torah lays emphasis on what we're starting. The truth of the matter is, we both finish and begin. And that's why the famous clarion call of Simchas Torah is Sisu v'Simchu v'Simchas Torah. Sisu means finish the Torah and Simchu, and then begin it again. But the day that the name that the day carries with it is that of Simcha. In terms of what lies ahead. This is the antidote to Kosha Eilai Predaschem, because then we're not taking part of the days. On the contrary, we're leaving open a vehicle to take what we got from these days and keep it with us. And there are halachic reverberations we should know for this idea. Here we on the day of Yom Tov, we make a seal for the Torah. The Keren Ora in Maseches Moed Katan raises a question. We have a principle in halacha, ein la'arvin simcha b'simcha. We don't typically try and superimpose one simcha on the other. And the reason why, al derech ha'seichel, is because each one should have its own focus, should have its own space, so that one can completely engage, but not to overlap, and then each one would detract from the other. So we don't lay a simchas one on top of the other. That's why it's also to get married on Yom Tov. Shabbos or Yom Tov specifically, aside from issues of writing the ksuba and all of that, which clearly would be a problem, but and the kinyonim, etc. But the Gemara says in Moed Katan, v'samachta b'chagecha, Yom Tov, you've got to be happy with the Yom Tov, v'lo b'ishtecha, not with your wife. Meaning you can't, each one needs its own focus. You can't be having Yom Tov thoughts when you're meant to be getting married. You can't be having married thoughts when you're meant to be having Yom Tov. Everything needs its own. Multitasking is not popular in halacha. You've got to do everything properly. It deserves a full focus. So the Keren Ora asked the question, so how can we have a siyum on Yom Tov? Shemini Atzeres is Yom Tov to make a siyum. Each one is getting in the way of the other. Detracting. Disrupting. Say the Mefarshim, no. The siyum on Simchas Torah is actually solidifying and enhancing the simcha of the Yom Tov. Because the whole of the Yom Tov is about taking measures to keep things open and to keep those channels open, to keep the lessons current. The vehicle to do that is the Torah, and therefore finishing the Torah and beginning again is actually hand in hand with what the Yom Tov of Shmini Atzeres is about. There is no issue of Ein Ma'arvin Simcha B'Simcha. It's all the same Simcha. So these are thoughts I think are valuable for us to take with us into the Sukkos, the flow of Sukkos, and the day of Shmini Atzeres itself. I wish you all a Chag Sameach. May Hashem meet again in 2 weeks' time. Next week, Parshas Brachos, but it's Chol HaMoed.